it. An analysis shows that East Europeans count their pennies for Christmas as food costs soar. Food prices in Hungary were a staggering 45.2% higher in October than a year earlier. Eurostat data shows, with 10 countries in the EU's east facing food price inflation of more than 20%. The cost of food was 33.3% higher in Lithuania and up 30% in Latvia compared to October 2021. And while there are signs headline inflation may be peaking in some countries, food prices are still rising strongly, adding to a cost of living squeeze and forcing central banks to keep interest rates high, even as economies started slowing sharply. Experts say local factors are exacerbating a global trend driven by rising energy and fertilizer costs, including low food industry productivity in some countries, heavy exposure to imports, and surging wages in tight labor markets. In Hungary, a severe drought decimated maize and wheat crops this year and caused animal feed prices to rocket, while the weak foreign has raised import costs. Surging prices have started to dampen consumption. Food sales fell 5.6% in Hungary in October as families faced with year-on-year rises of over 34% for meat and fish and 80% for bread made savings. Czech shoppers, meanwhile, grappled with a 105% rise in sugar prices, while flour costs 45.4% more in Poland.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi and Shaykh Rouhani. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
You're welcome. And Shaykh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about the establishment of unity between Islamic seminary or Hauza and university. As some of our dear listeners might know, Azar 27th, we can say in the solar system or solar calendar, is known as the day of unity between Islamic Hauza and university, and that is because it is the martyrdom anniversary of Shahid Ayatollah Dr. Muhammad Mufatteh, one of the most outstanding Islamic figures who was martyred at the beginning of the Islamic Revolution of Iran by the Furqan group, who martyred Shahid Mutahhari too. He had direct role in making dialogues between university and Hausa, and his life, his scholarly life especially, was very much fruitful. That's why for today's discussion, we want to talk about the establishment of unity between Hausa and Islamic Seminary. So Sayyid Mohsen, at the first look, it might look that, for example, there is no connection between Hausa and university, because university is mostly about, we can say, science, and Hausa is about ma'rifah, and what is the link between the two? Is there a link?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, I am also someone who is related to the university first and then came to Hausa.
Okay, very good.
Because I did my MBA in finance from University of Wales, England.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there, I studied there for 5 years. Then I went back to Pakistan, where I was a university lecturer
mm-hmm.
for 2 years. And then I entered the Hausa of Qom.
Okay.
And what I can say from my personal life is that obviously the actual knowledge which I have found in the Hausa was not in the university. Mm-hmm. Why? Because the university, you're just after a study that gives you a good job, that can provide you something from which you can earn a better earning. You can have maybe, you know, generally people when they select to become a doctor, an accountant, maybe,
yes.
An engineer. It yes. is just the aspect behind it. The reason is, the goal is that I need to get a better job. Maybe I can have a good trade, become a good trader, good yes. accountant. The whole look is material look.
Mm-hmm.
And this material look does not bring peace in your life. You know, you become greedy and greedy and greedy, but you never reach to a level where you're satisfied with what you have done. Maybe someone say, like, I have this much salary, so I'm satisfied. Even that salary does not satisfy. He goes for more and more. And on the other hand, the knowledge, the type of science which we learn over there, it, because it is just connected to a specific thing, it has nothing to do with my rest of life. For example, when someone becomes an accountant or engineer, yeah, in their personal life, they don't have any application of such thing. Yeah, most of us is like that.
Yes.
That the place where we work, it has nothing to do with our life. It does not help in training our kids.
Yes.
Even if I'm a doctor, even if I'm a psychologist, it does not help the training my kids how to deal with my family and all those things.
Yeah.
Therefore, when you come to the Hausa, it's a full pack of your life, because the Hausa is based on the teachings of the Quran, and the Quran is the set of life.
Yes.
And it teaches you how to deal with the parents, how to study. And obviously there are differences as well. Like
yes.
there are many differences in the method of studying,
mm-hmm.
the way we used to study there and the way they study over here. So these are the differences. On the other hand, since you have mentioned about the Shahid Mufatteh,
yes.
We should know about him that he was a theologian, he was a philosopher,
yes.
he was a political activist, and he had great teachers like Ayatollah Burujardi,
yes.
Ayatollah Kuh Kamari,
yes.
like Madrasah Hujjatiya in the
yes,
Qom.
Yes.
It's been obviously made by Ayatollah Kuh Kamari. And there was Imam Khomeini was also from his teachers.
Yes.
And Allama Tabatabai and Ayatollah Marashi.
Yes.
So such a person who was basically have benefited from all these great scholars. And after that, he went to study philosophy from University of Tehran.
Yes.
So he started from this way. You know, you can say like he was a seminary guy.
Yes.
And then he went to study the
university.
The university. And after that, obviously, the personality that we see is a personality who had a lot of experience,
mm-hmm.
who know how to deal with both.
Yes.
On the other hand, because the people who are studying in the university, as I can give my own example, we are empty. And we are after a kind of peace, which we cannot find.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, on the other hand, when we look at the seminary, it gives us the material aspect and the spiritual aspect.
That's right.
It has both things. So for me, this is much better. But obviously, I will not say like everyone should leave
mm-hmm.
the sciences. Otherwise, you know,
yes.
we will say like to leave the
yes.
living.
Yes.
This is not the case. And
okay.
on the other hand, we can see even in the Iran initially, there was a unity, and there is
yes.
a unity between the Hausa and the
universities.
Universities.
Yes.
Why? Because, you know, the traders, especially in Tehran,
mm-hmm.
You know these old, which have the chi at the end, like yes, surnames.
Yes, yes.
They were studying makasib from the, ulama. Makasib is a seminary book, which is Islamic, you can say. And whoever used to study that book, they used to allow him to enter into the market to do trade.
Yes.
Because now he knows the ethical points as well, the Islamic points and the material, we can say, like the sciences, which he needs. So if someone is not studying such a book, the people in the market were not allowing such a person to enter into the market. Otherwise, there will be a corruption. There will be, other things. So in order to have this market secure and pure and peaceful, they have made such rules at that time.
That's right.
So we can see these things in the time as
okay.
well.
Inshallah. Thank you very much. Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, what's your take on that? How to establish unity between Hausa and university?
Yes, one of the ways that we can bring or establish a kind of solidarity between Hausa and university is this, that we should understand that what and the purpose of education or any educational system is this: to make a better life for the people, or to make our lives better. So this is one of the main goal and one of the main purposes of each educational systems.
Yes.
So based on this principle, I think we should first of all think of a good and best kind of educational system in our universities that could help us as Muslims to live a better life.
Good.
But the problem is that sometimes the modern systems, the modern curriculums or educational systems are based on some of kind of values or principles or lifestyles that is for non-Muslims. Because these modern systems were established by Europeans.
You mean this, the secular values?
The secular kind of system, yeah. So that's why one of the responsibilities of Muslims, professors, teachers, elites, is this: to think about a better system which would be in accordance with the Islamic teachings and doctrines. But at this, so it means that a bit we should traditionalize these modern systems and universities. But at the same time, when it comes to Hausawi and Islamic seminary systems, of course, we are in need of modernizing this system. You know, we should a bit modernize these traditional systems as the Islamic House of Qom did it by Al-Mustafa International University and by the other Islamic centers. They modernized these systems. So, of course, both sides, we are in need of both of them.
Yes.
That a bit modernization of the traditional systems and traditionalization of our modern systems.
That's right.
So that finally we could find a kind of suitable system for our Islamic society. The problem nowadays we have is this, that sometimes the educated figures from our universities,
yes,
they are not truly Muslims even.
Religious enough.
Yeah, religious enough, Muslims enough.
Okay.
So then they cannot provide us with a better life as Muslims.
That's right.
Because of what? Because it is the outcome of those modern system.
Yes.
We should not blame it on this educated person. Yes. Should go to their system.
Yes.
So that is why I think one of the main responsibilities of both Hausawi professors and university professors is this: to sit together and bring and establish a suitable kind of system both Hausa to solve our social problems, economical problems, let's say, and also the university system and the modern system.
Yes.
This is what we are in need of.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
But I think the most outstanding common ground between university and Hausa is the rationality and the thinking process, okay? This is very important. Also, the branches and the fields of studies might differ, but both of them have the same origin, and that is thoughts. And I mean, this thought development exists between the two. So it could be a nice ground for establishing dialogue between the two. Just to take a look at the Islamic Republic of Iran. So many of the students who were and the professors at the University of Tehran, or the most outstanding universities of Iran, were the Hausavi students. Some of them also have reached, for example, high levels, like, for example, Dr. Shahidi or Dr. Gorji, for example. Okay, they have reached high levels of ijtihad in the cities of Najaf, and then they become the professors of, for example, law, or, for example, history of Islam, or these, or literature. Humayi, for example, and the other outstanding men of the literature of the University of Tehran used to study religious sciences. Their fathers were from the clergymen. They were mujtahid, okay? And much respect existed between the two. For example, just look at the dialogues that existed between, for example, Professor Furuzan Far, who was a Persian, we can say, literature professor of the University of Tehran, and Ayatollah Marashi Najafi, okay? When he went to the Qom, you know, he visited him. There was nice dialogues between them. Exchange of the books took place between them. I do want to say such a respect existed for both of them. But is this at all right, Sayyid Mohsen? I mean, Islamicization of the humanities at the universities. Do you believe in such a process or no? To Islamicize some of the fields which are related to human studies.
Well, if you mean Islamicization of the human sciences, if you mean that to follow the footsteps or the teachings of Quran in the human sciences, that is right. Mm-hmm. That is the first thing. In the Muslim countries, it should be. For example, when we talk about the politics, it is within the religion. It's not separate from the religion. When we talk about the law, law is within the religion. In the Islamic countries, there must be Islamic rules and laws which must be applied and should be taught or taught in the universities. And same is the case with the economics, that in the economy, we should follow the rules. Because why? Because Islam is paying attention towards the justice. And justice is important in all fields. In the political fields, if you have someone who is against you, all right, this is a matter of, you know, political view. But it is unjust to make him totally wrong. Mm-hmm. There might be something which he's saying right, and you should follow it. Generally, these are the points that we see. For example, if someone is in the opposition, the one who's in government, they do not want to accept even a single word, even if it's true, of the opposition.
Yes.
This is out of justice. This is out of Islamic ethics, which has been taught by Islam. Therefore, when it is the case that we need to follow the footsteps of Quran and the Islam or the Prophet, that is true. On the other hand, the very good point which was mentioned by our dear guest was, what is the goal and aim of the education system? The main goal and aim of the education system is to make a good human.
Yes.
You know, if you want to have a good life, mm-hmm. you need to be a good human being.
Yes.
If the education system is failed to make someone a good human being, he can never have a good life. You know, he might be an arrogant boss. He might be someone who's working in a place and he's doing his personal, you know, matters at the time of work.
Yes.
You know, he might not be a good politician, accusing each other, blaming, using, you know, wrong words against each other.
Yes.
And so on. There are many things.
Humanistic values will be
the doctor who is being supposed to save humanity. He is making his more income and more and more. So he's working for himself.
Yes.
He takes patients for himself. He pays like less attention towards the free patients, for example.
Yes.
So in all matters, if an education system is not making a good human being, no one can have a good life.
That's
and this
right.
is the issue.
Okay.
That today, the secular system that we have in the universities,
mm-hmm.
the system itself, we are not talking about the educational books or material.
Yes.
We are talking about the system. The outcome of system is not to just teach engineering or medicine or, you know, human sciences to a person.
Yes.
It is aimed that this person, when he qualifies from this place, he has the knowledge, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, which is very important, he's a good human being.
Human being, that's right.
And
the
today
Hausa can
this,
help.
Yes, Hausa is helping.
Yes.
Because in Hausa, they more focus on become a good human. Human.
The akhlaq, ethical
yes.
parts are more...
The ethical part yes. is more important.
Yes.
And even if you know less about religion, if you know how to deal ethically with the people, if you're a good human being, mm-hmm. in your house, all your family is happy with you.
That's right.
Your neighbors are happy. And that's why people are more respecting the seminaries, like, mm-hmm. you know, the clergies.
Yes,
why
yes.
they respect them? Because of their ethical
that's
issues.
Right. Okay.
And Prophet as well, you know, we know that in the Quran, Allah said, like, we have sent you to complete the, you know, the ethics and to be the role model for the people. Therefore, the universities can take these lessons from the Hausa, especially when we see, like in the Islamic Republic of Iran, we see many clergies who studied in the Hausa. Now they become the professors in
yes.
the universities.
Yes.
Now you can see
especially
the difference
in fields of theology, Islamic
yeah.
philosophy.
So you can see the difference of, you know, even the dealing with the students, the
yes.
way they deal with the students and the students as well.
That's right. Okay. Okay, Sheikh, anything missed?
Just one point that I can add here. Of course, when it comes to, as our guest Sayyid emphasized on making a good human, mm-hmm. yeah, that's true. But at the same time, we are in need of these modern sciences
yes.
and modern technology. So that's why Muslims should make a balance between
mm-hmm.
both sides.
Very good.
So we have to have these traditional studies, sciences that we have. But at the same time, we should utilize and make use of these modern
right.
sciences, modern technologies.
Obviously, our discussion
but of course,
is not
based,
about,
yeah, based on those Islamic kind of principles in accordance with the Islamic, let's say, worldview.
Yes. Okay.
I said my discussion is not on the material right now.
Yes, yes.
We want to know about the goal of that. Obviously, in the Islamic Republic of Iran, we have seen, like, after the revolution,
mm-hmm.
they have advanced.
Yes.
In many scientific fields.
Yes, yes.
Within the religion, within
yes.
the parameters of the religion.
Yes.
So they have advanced in these things. On
Definitely.
The other hand, when we say the modernization of the Hausa, this is not a good word to use, that we need to modernize the Hausa, because Hausa has its own way of traveling. For example, you know, when you become a mujtahid, there's a specific way. If you make shortcuts the way it is in the universities, then you are basically dealing with the quality of the education
mm-hmm.
which a person needs to have. So this is very important that, you know, even our brother has given the example of many institutes that they have modernized. For example, they have brought the credit system, 2 hours credit for this subject, 2 hours for that. Therefore, we are lacking the quality which we needed in the Hausa.
Okay.
And the Hausa, basically, the main theme is to make you a good person. Number two, to give you the tools of how to basically extract things out of the Quran and the Hadith and to apply in the society.
Okay, that's right. Thank you very much, Sheikh. It was very kind of you. We hope that university and Hausa can help each other in order to, as you said, nurture good human beings. You know, we have experts enough, I think, nowadays in the world from both sides, the clergyman and the university man, okay? But we need good human beings who can help their fellow men, brothers, and sisters all across the world. Thank you much, Sheikh and Sayyid. It was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Ali. حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من
Food for thought.
Salam, friends, and let us begin the day by contemplating on a gem of an advice from the Prophet's first infallible heir, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him. He who adopts greed as a habit devalues himself. He who discloses his hardship agrees to humiliation. And he who allows his tongue to overpower his soul debases the soul.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Terrorists hijacked four commercial airliners and crashed the first two planes into the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York City. The third plane targeted the Pentagon, and the fourth one crashed in a field near its target, a federal government building in Washington, D.C. The attacks killed nearly 3,000 people. It soon became clear that 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudi citizens, many of them in close contact with Saudi officials. Despite ample evidence of Saudi complicity in the 9/11 attacks, the Bush administration and its successors have spent more than two decades protecting the kingdom's elite from accountability. Since the release of the redacted 28 pages of the 9/11 Commission in 2016, Saudi culpability for the attacks has become undeniable. Yet one of the inexplicable points is how Saudi Arabia, as a government most responsible for the tragedy, avoided Washington's punishment.
What you'll find when you take a look at the document is that it will confirm what we have been saying for quite some time, which is that this material was investigative material that was reviewed and followed up on by the independent 9/11 commission that was formed outside of the U.S. government to take a look at the attacks of 9/11. And the conclusion of the 9/11 commission was, as they wrote, they found, quote, no evidence that the Saudi government as an institution or senior Saudi officials individually funded al-Qaeda.
The American fury was directed against the poor nation of Afghanistan. And ironically, the Bush administration turned Saudi Arabia into a trusted partner in what it called the war on terrorism.
It's simply not clear. At some levels, they cooperate. At other levels, they cut deals. Nobody really understands the interstices of the kingdom.
After all, Saudi Arabia has constantly been one of the major spenders on U.S. lobbying, courting both parties, as well as the press, to have their positive coverage. Back in September 2021, U.S. President Joe Biden ordered the Department of Justice to review documents from the FBI's probe into the 9/11 attacks for classification and release. Things might change as the ties between Washington and Riyadh are getting sour. But these executive orders are mostly intended to extract concessions from the Saudis.
Last year, when President Biden signed an executive order to declassify FBI documents, this put concrete evidence to the role that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia played in the 9/11 attacks. We now know that over a dozen Saudi government officials were involved in facilitating the 9/11 attacks. One of these individuals was working as a Saudi intelligence operative.
On the other hand, the bloody war in Yemen has thrown Washington's role in Saudi crimes into sharp relief. Saudi-led airstrikes in Yemen have been called war crimes. A joint analysis carried out by the Washington Post and the Security Force Monitor at Columbia Law School's Human Rights Institute in early June this year revealed for the first time that the United States supported the majority of Air Force squadrons involved in the Saudi coalition's years-long air campaign. As the world focused its attention on the Ukraine-Russia conflict earlier this year, the so-called Saudi-led coalition carried out more than 150 airstrikes on civilian targets in Yemen, including homes, hospitals, and communication towers, according to the Yemen Date Project. The air campaign alone has killed at least 24,000 people, according to conservative estimates by the Armed Conflict Location and Event Date Project, ACLED. That said, hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have died from the fighting or its indirect consequences, such as hunger and disease. The analysis shows that a substantial portion of the air raids were carried out by jets developed, maintained, and sold by U.S. companies and by pilots who were trained by the U.S. military. In 2019, then-U.S. President Donald Trump vetoed three joint resolutions prohibiting arms sales to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, rejecting an attempt by congressional lawmakers to halt the controversial weapons transfer.
Trump's successor, who came to office with seemingly anti-Saudi rhetoric, announced an end to U.S. military support for offensive operations carried out by the Saudi-led coalition against Yemen. But maintenance contracts to coalition squadrons carrying out offensive missions have continued so far. The gruesome murder of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul was just another outrageous episode in Washington's aiding and abetting of Riyadh. The U.S. government's inaction on this blatant crime speaks volumes. According to Bob Woodward, in his book Rage, Trump openly bragged about protecting Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman from scrutiny after the royal was accused of orchestrating the murder and dismemberment of Khashoggi. And in mid-November, the Biden administration determined that bin Salman has immunity from a lawsuit filed by Khashoggi's fiancé. The U.S. official explanation for this granting of immunity is that bin Salman is now the Saudi kingdom's prime minister and therefore cannot be prosecuted. Biden is accused of dragging his feet on this case, as he had almost 2 years to take a more decisive stance without compromising his integrity. The U.S. hypocritical stance on the Khashoggi case is in fact the continuation of its stance on other human rights violations committed by the Saudis, among them Riyadh's mass executions. The mass execution of 81 individuals in March this year, for instance, was met with deep, long silence on behalf of the United States, the self-proclaimed champion of freedom and human rights in the world. Washington's occasional condemnation, shrouded in ambiguous words, has never been more than a slap on the wrist at the most. Saudi Arabia is regarded as the world's largest source of funds and promoter of Takfiri Salafi ideology, manifested itself in terrorist groups such as Al-Qaeda and Daesh. In a December 2009 diplomatic cable to U.S. State Department staff, then U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton wrote, "Donors in Saudi Arabia constitute the most significant source of funding to terrorist groups worldwide. But the fact is, Saudi Arabia has never been held accountable by the Americans for their blatant support of terrorism." A look at the number of arms sales agreements between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia affirms this point. In 2016, then-Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull asked Obama, "Aren't the Saudis your friends?" Obama famously replied, "It's complicated." Perhaps part of this complexity stems from Washington's complicity in Saudi Arabia's crimes, whether directly or indirectly. By letting Saudi Arabia off the hook over the 9/11 attacks and other crimes of massive proportions, the U.S. has encouraged Riyadh to go on with its brutality, both at home and abroad.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. I invite you to be with us, because today we're going to speak about the behavior and social interaction of a believer.
I pray to God, my heart, soul, and body, every single day of my life, with every breath, I solemnly promise to try to live my life for you. Oh, Allah, you did revive my soul and shone your light into my heart. So please, you is now my only goal. Oh, I love you so.
I love you so.
But first, we look at the calendar. Today, Saturday, is the 22nd of Jamadi al-Awwal, 1444 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 26th of the month of Azar, 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 17th of December, 2022 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. It's nice to listen to some verses of the Holy Quran and the points of these verses. We choose chapter Al-Furqan, verses 63 to 64.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وعباد الرحمن الذين يمشون على الأرض هونا وإذا خاطبهم الجاهلون قالوا سلاما.
And the servants of the Most Merciful are those who walk upon the earth easily. And when the ignorant address them harshly, they say words of peace.
وَالَّذِينَ يَبِيتُونَ لِرَبِّهِمْ سُجَّدًا وَقِيَامًا.
And those who spend part of the night to their Lord, prostrating and standing in prayer.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The behavior of each person shows his personality and character. The supreme reward and medal for men is the medal of servitude of Allah from this holy verse on. An interesting and comprehensive discussion about the attributes of Allah's special slaves is brought up under the title of the Servants of the Beneficent, Allah. In these two verses and the next verses, more than 10 attributes of theirs are mentioned, some of which are related to the creedal aspects. Some are moral, some are social, some are personal, and some are collective. On the whole, they are of the supreme humane values.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Dear brothers and sisters, you are with today's special from IRIB English Radio. And as I told you, the topic of this episode is behavior and social interaction of a believer. Islam is a comprehensive religion. Its teachings touch upon all aspects of life. This is because in every aspect of life, the Muslim should be worshiping and serving Allah. There is no compartment of life that can ever fall outside of that general precept. Islam, therefore, goes well beyond articles of faith and ritual acts of worship. All of a Muslim's behavior, manners, ethics, and practice must reflect his belief that there is none worthy of worship except Allah. It is inconceivable that someone should claim to be worshiping Allah while at the same time he mistreats this person, cheats another person, and harms yet a third. This kind of behavior would demonstrate that his claim to belief is either outright false or is very diseased.
Thank you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The topic of our discussion today is about the code of conduct for a Muslim. What codes of conduct are expected to be seen and or to be reported from a Muslim, from a believer? Some guidelines of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam in the fields of personal and social behavior, socializing with others and dealing with the new generation and youth, legal issues, marriage, customs, taking a stand against the governments and politicians of the time, scientific teachings, education, medicine, and dozens of other topics are among the enlightening guidelines that we usually have it and receive it in the words of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, who are the real and actual interpreters of the Holy Quran. Again, alongside with all these beautiful narrations and, let's say, histories and conduct that we have from the enlightening lives of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, we have the beauties of the history pages on the life of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam as a golden leaf in the history of the followers of the school of Ahlul Bayt. So we have, I think, plenty of these quotes and sayings and, let's say, reports that shows us and tells us what a true believer should be like and how should he present himself in a society level or even in a family level, the kind of way that the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam actually present himself. One of the characteristics that are expected from the followers of the school of Ahlul Bayt to take it from their leaders and let's say religious authorities is endurance and stability. So this is one of the codes of conduct that we learn it from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. And that undoubtedly, perseverance and persistence on the way to the goal is one of the factors of human success. There are people who have achieved their desires and dreams in their lives, and they have put in the utmost effort and perseverance to achieve it.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio. Today's special.
This is today's special and Muslim code of behavior. One of them is live in the light of the Holy Quran. When someone asks from the wife of the Prophet, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, about the Prophet's manners, she responded that his manners was the Quran. This means that he lived and acted according to the injunctions of the Quran. As a Muslim, you have your role model in the Messenger of Allah. So, as he has his manners, be a direct interpretation of the Quran. If Allah forbids us something in the Quran, it is part of disobedience and good manners to stay away from it. If he encourages us towards something good, then we go towards it. Part of improving our behavior is adopting the manners that are mentioned in the Quran, practicing patience so that you can be from the sabireen, that means patient ones, fearing Allah so that you can be from the muttaqoon, that means the fearful ones.
والإكرام يا
social behavior that we should notice about is respecting for elders, parents in particular. Allah Almighty instructs humanity to reciprocate their parents' devotion to their well-being and education through tender, kind, and thoughtful consideration for them in their old age. Quranic references include, "For your Lord has ordered you not to worship any except Him. He also commanded you to be good to your parents. Should either or both of them reach old age and need care, do not behave irritably or reproach and reject them, but always respond to them gently. Treat them with humility and tenderness and pray, 'Lord, be merciful to them, as they were to me when I was young, when I was little.'" Dear brothers and sisters, you can find this concept on chapter 17 of the Holy Quran, verses 23 to 25. Listen to this. "Your Lord is aware of what is in your heart and how you behave towards His creation. He's all-forgiving to those who repent." Society depends on parents maintaining responsibility for the care, nature, and education of their offspring, and this is balanced by the reciprocal responsibility to be good to parents.
Many people in this life is to seek and search for comfort, for relaxation. We humans by nature, we don't like to be overburdened with responsibilities. We seek less responsibility, less commitment, less involvement, less work. By our nature, this is in the Quran. This fact is mentioned in the Quran. By our nature, we look for comfort and relaxation always. And also by their nature, they look for a religion which is very easy, for a liberal religion, a religion that has no restrictions whatsoever. A religion that tells its followers that it is halal to do anything you like. Just follow your whim, your desires, your wishes, and God will be happy with you. But religion, first and foremost, religion is about discipline in this life. Religion came to regulate my life, to organize my life, to make my life productive life, to protect me and to protect the society. This is the meaning of religion. This is why we are religious. When there are certain restrictions, this is for me, not against me.
That was all from today's special. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode of today's special by IRIB English Radio. Till then, we leave you in Allah's protection. Fi aman Allah.
Crazy, who you're praying for? They told me there is nothing who you're looking for. Stop doing what you're doing, 'cause there is no hope. Just come with me, I'll show you what's behind your door. And they showed me all kind of lies. My eyes were locked, yes, I was mesmerized.
But deep inside I know that there's a better world. 'Cause I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.